Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. Are you ready for a snowstorm of global proportion? Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just hit your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
Welcome to the show. It's September 22nd, 2015 at 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, but this podcast lives on in perpetuity, so listen whenever you want. In this particular episode, it's part of a series of shows I'm doing featuring filmmakers that may have a lot in common, but in this case, the one thing they have in common is all of their films were selected to be part of the 2015 edition of Cinema Diverse, the Palm Springs LGBTQ Film Festival. Check out cinemadiverse.org for this annual event. In today's episode, I welcome Kevin Michael Irvine, writer-director of the feature film As Long as It Takes. The film won Best Editing at Los Angeles Independent Film Festival, was chosen as an audience favorite at IFCOM in Jakarta, and has been an official selection of multiple film festivals. And I'm a filmmaker, and more about the film in today's episode, and I'm so glad.
The snowstorm continues after this.
Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch, scrumptious dinners serving fresh fish, perfect steaks, pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
Hi. I'm Nicholas Snow. Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California, and I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before, and I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs, housing, case management. Very unique in the nation that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert AIDS Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit desertaidsproject.org.
And now, on with the show. He's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and to media outlets throughout the world. He's an author, singer, songwriter, actor, and activist, and the executive producer and host of NicholasSnow.tv. He has created and continues to do so a snowstorm of global proportions dedicated to connecting the circuitry of humanity. And now, drifting into the studio and your life once again, Nicholas Snow.
In the film As Long as It Takes, a party turns into the perfect disaster. It's New Year's Eve in San Francisco, and Cheryl is hosting a formal party for her boss and colleagues. But she makes a big mistake by asking her gay brother, Jeffrey, to bartend. Thinking it's an open party, Jeffrey invites his hustler boyfriend, Julian. Then Julian invites his ex-lover, Brett. And then Brett invites his two filmmaker friends, Dan and Steve, from Hollywood. Add to that, Cheryl's cousins from Milwaukee show up. and also a weird party crasher looking for some fun. Pretty soon, nobody's there that's supposed to be there. Here's a taste.
What are you wearing?
And we're in San Francisco. We dress how we want to dress.
Well, you look ridiculous.
So when's old Harlan going to show up with his entourage?
Oh, he's working late.
He sucks your blood.
He's my boss. He has the right to suck my blood. You invited a washed-up male model who put you through 9 kinds of hell to my New Year's Eve party?
Sometimes people change.
In a week? You and me, we have more in common than you think.
You pay for sex, too?
You dumped Jeffrey for him after he dumped you for some swish from Hollywood. It's an international kind of party.
You punched a cop!
It was a lesbian security guard.
What a bitchin' party!
Happy goddamn New Year!
Tracy, put that away!
Haven't you ever tried to improve your life?
I do all the time. I just keep meeting poor people. Happy New Year!
Go to hell.
And without further ado, let's welcome to the studio Kevin Michael Irvine, the writer-director of As Long As It Takes. Welcome, Kevin. How's it going?
Good, Nicholas. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure to meet you in person and to see your film. And congratulations. Anybody that gets a film made deserves congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a long haul, but it's definitely worth it.
I didn't know until this weekend at Cinema Diverse, where I had the opportunity to meet you, that the film is based on a play. So let's go back in your story to when you decided to write the play. I mean, were you already a playwright?
No, I'm mostly a filmmaker. But the story that I had really, I probably shouldn't be too honest here, but it did come from some real parties that I had attended. So I thought, you know what, this really deserves a live audience and, you know, some actors. And so we put on readings in Los Angeles, and we came really close to putting the play up for maybe 6 weeks. But then we didn't quite raise all the money that we were supposed to, so we didn't do it. So it just sort of sat there for a long time. And once HD cameras came in, and we were able to shoot HD instead of film, which is HD is so much cheaper, we set it up, and I found some investors, and we were able to do it for so much less than we would have. Than it would have cost if we had put it on stage. So that's why it's called based on the unproduced play, because the play was never produced. But I think we did the right thing, you know, because I really do think more cinematically than I do as a stage director.
Well, tell me about how you got into show business to.
Oh, well, I was making movies back when I was, like, you know, 18, 19 years old. And I just love movies. And so at the time, I had a Super 8 camera. And so I did a couple of, like, 10-minute movies here and so forth. And then we made a movie that won an award at the Boston Book Festival. And that was back in, like, 1974. And so that kind of gave me a little pick-me-up, so to speak. And so, you know, I came out to California, and I've been trying to make movies ever since.
Okay, so what have you done professionally in California?
You can see there's a movie called The Greenstone, narrated by Orson Welles. And Orson Welles was an acquaintance of mine. And he did me the favor of narrating this short film, which is about a 40-minute movie, and it's a fantasy about a little boy who gets lost in the forest, and it's on YouTube right now, so you can see that.
What's the name of it again?
The Greenstone, one word.
So my audience would slap me if I didn't ask you how you came to know Orson Welles with that piece of information you just shared.
I knew you were going to ask me. At the time, I worked as an assistant film editor in Hollywood, and we were doing TV commercials called, they were for Palmasan wine, and Orson Welles was the narrator of the Palmasan wine commercials. And you're probably too young to remember, but the slogan was, "We will sell no wine before it's time."
I completely remember that. I'm 53 years old. Okay. I'm 53 years old, but I completely remember that from when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. Well, good. Well, so that's how I met Orson.
And, we will sell no wine before it's time.
Before it's time. And a wonderful man, right at the end of his life, around 1979 or 80, he passed in 85. But before he passed, I asked him, I told him about this movie that I wanted to make, and I asked him if he would narrate it, because at the time, we couldn't afford sync sound, if you can believe that. So we were going to narrate most of the movie. So we actually got about 3.5 minutes worth of narration out of Orson. Sweet, sweet man. He would come over to our place, and I wore a few different hats at the time, and one of the hats was I was a projectionist in this theater that we had. It wasn't huge, but it was big enough. It probably sat about 50 people. And Orson actually brought screen tests in that he wanted to see, and he would, like, do lighting tests. He would, like, he'd show us these kind of strange and wonderful, very Shakespearean lighting tests where he would, like, dress up in, like, all these different costumes and then walk through the light, basically. And it was all MOS. You know, he didn't talk or anything. But I never charged him for his screening. And he was like, "Oh, thank you very much. You didn't charge me. I really appreciate that." And so when it came time to do the Greenstone, I was like, "Gee, I wonder if Orson would remember that I didn't charge him for his, you know, all of his screening time." And of course, I had cleared it with my bosses. I'm like, you know, "Hey, you guys, this is Orson Welles. We have to cough up here." And so, sure enough, Orson took the script and gave me back my narration for my movie. And it was my father at the time was like, "Are you kidding me? Orson Welles? Really? He's narrating your movie?" And I'm like, "Yeah."
I have a I won't tell it now, but I'll tease my audience and you by just saying that I have a first person experience with Marlon Brando. I know what it's like to have a brush with Hollywood royalty. So you originally conceived As Long as It Takes as a play, and then ultimately developed it for film. How long did it take you to turn this theatrical script into a screenplay?
30 years.
Oh, you really wrote the play 30 years before you made the movie?
Oh, yeah. Nicholas, I had a day job. I've had a day job my whole life.
Well, you get even more congratulations for taking it out of the closet and dusting it off and moving ahead.
Well, the problem was, back then, I don't think people really got it. You know, they didn't get the gay characters and the... It wasn't supposed to be a pro-gay show or a pro-straight show. It was supposed to be a bunch of people that find themselves together at a party. And the comedy comes from the real characters. I mean, the hardest part of making a true, you know, I don't know if you want to call it a play or a film, is to make the people real. You know, this is one of the things about my favorite comedy in the whole wide world is it's a mad, 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 mad world, because all those characters pretty much felt real. And that's what I wanted for this show. On a much smaller level, of course.
I loved the authenticity and variety of characters. When the interview continues, we're going to delve more into the making of As Long as It Takes.
Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. The snowstorm continues after this.
New designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Area rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revivals. Voted best of the Valley thrift stores. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revivals. Find it here. Visit us at RevivalStores.com to find a Revival store near you.
Hey folks, mark your calendars for early November because it's time for Greater Palm Springs Pride, Southern California's popular and longest-running LGBT festival in the Coachella Valley. Palm Canyon Drive is closed to traffic and transformed into a vibrant, pedestrian-friendly Pride festival unique to Southern California. Palm Springs Pride is also one of the sponsoring organizations of the annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast, which takes place every year in May. Visit pspride.org.
The LGBT Community Center of the Desert is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enriching the lives of the LGBT community in the Valley through health and wellness, social and educational programs. The center advances its mission through a clinical counseling and internship program, senior programming, youth anti-bullying and suicide prevention support programs, a growing volunteer program, and signature special events in the community for its members and allies. For more information on the LGBT Community Center, visit them on the web at thecenterps.org.
And I'm speaking with filmmaker Kevin Michael Irvine. We're talking about As Long as It Takes. So, Kevin, when you finally, after 30 years, transformed your script for a play into a screenplay, when exactly did you have a shootable screenplay?
I would say probably about 2006.
So 2006, you had a screenplay, and then did you already know at that point who you might approach for investing? I think that predates all of this crowdfunding that we're experiencing, so you must have needed to take a more traditional approach to finding the support.
Oh, no, it was definitely not crowdfunding. These were people who had been involved with the play, and you know, they knew that what we had tried to do, you know, to put it up in Equity Waiver Theaters, you know, way back 20 years ago. And so I was like, you know what, guys, we have these HD cameras. Can we just shoot this now? And remarkably, everybody that, you know, that was an investor said, yeah. I mean, we're talking people who even I went to college with and graduate school. And they, you know, they came up with $1,500 here or $2,000 there, and it was great. It really, really made me feel good. And they smiled when they wrote the check, and they handed it to me. It's like, here you go. Just go do it. And, you know, you can't really buy that kind of loyalty from friends. And so I was really, really complimented. I wanted to do the best job I could, you know, for them and for the show. And, you know, now we're going through these film festivals, which it's kind of gratifying to get these awards, you know, after all that. My friend Greg, he's back in Milwaukee, and he said, gee, Kev, I had no idea that I was going to be a movie producer of an award-winning movie. And he said, you made my day. And I was like, that felt good, you know. So
that's a beautiful story.
So that's how it happened.
So I guess since it took 30 years to make the movie, that you didn't have the movie didn't have the cast you initially envisioned, because it was 30 years later.
Correct. That's correct. I went to a friend of mine who had made some independent films, and his name was Phil, and Phil gave me a casting director's name. And this casting director was really, I mean, he was spot on. I mean, I just couldn't believe what he sent me, because each one that he sent me was, like, really good. And I had trouble, like, picking and choosing, but I think we did really well. I don't know. What do you think?
I have some favorite characters. There's some particular characters that you cast that I don't think could have been better. And I'm going to reveal who one of my favorite characters is in a moment. But did your casting director go through the breakdown services and the typical casting routes to cast a wide net? Do you know?
I don't think he casted a very wide net. I gave him the script and he read it and he sent me these people. I do have one exception, who was Annie Weatherby. Annie Heller was her stage name. And she was with the show from the very beginning. So Annie was there. She's the one from Milwaukee.
She's my favorite character in the whole.
Yeah, that's what I said.
The whole play.
You know, it's kind of funny because Annie wanted to know how the screening went in Palm Springs, and I said, well, you know what? I got tired of answering the question, who's that bright star from Milwaukee? Because people did like her very much. So
she was definitely my favorite character, and I think also. I agree that it takes a certain caliber of actor to pull off the dialogue that you have. So kudos to your cast. But the one that shined the brightest definitely was she.
Oh yeah, yeah. She said when she saw the movie in its final incarnation, she goes, "Oh, thanks, Kevin. Thank you for allowing me to chew up the scenery." And I'm like, "Well, that's fine. It's what we wanted." And she just thought that she should have been pulled back a couple times.
She doesn't overshadow the other characters, but her character is just extremely solid and memorable.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, she'll appreciate hearing that.
Now, one of the things I'd like to ask, well, you know, as a film evolves, the first one or two screenings is often going to be for an inner circle of investors, friends, and family that are all going to love your film, even if they don't. And then there comes a screening that is reaching an audience that's not comprised of your friends or your family or people that are predisposed to like your film. So I'm wondering if you would describe screening that went like that, the first screening for an audience that was not comprised of your friends and family. Tell me when and where it was, how it went, and what the reaction was.
Well, to be honest, the first screening that I had that wasn't all friends and family was just this weekend in Palm Springs. I mean, I had, you know, I gave the CD, or the DVDs out and stuff to certain people who had invested in the movie, but I wasn't in the room when they watched it. And I really had not seen it on the screen in like 4 years. So this was a really special audience today, this weekend for me, because people seemed to laugh in the right places and stuff. Now, if you don't mind, can I go back to the very first screening that we had?
Sure, go right ahead.
Can I tell you about that? Okay, so I was working for Fox at the time, 20th Century Fox, the film studio, not the TV thing. So I had the Zanuck, which is like the biggest theater in at the studio, but I didn't have that middle section of the party. And if your listeners don't really understand, it was originally planned as a three-act play. One was the beginning, where everybody's introduced, and act two was they all went out to a party, to a gay bar. And three,
right.
They come back. They come back, and that's the end of the show. You know, but it was definitely a three-act play. And I didn't have that middle act. And so I was like, it felt hollow. And even it was friends and family, and I knew I had a sense. They didn't get it. It wasn't going to be any good. It was a huge failure, you know. But we had run out of money again. And I was like, what am I going to do? So anyway, it sat for a while until my partner of 24 years, his buddy, watched the movie and said, why do you need that middle section? Everybody talks about what happened at the bar when they come back in Act Two. And all of a sudden, I'm telling you, Nicholas, it's like, I hate to admit it, really, because I'm a filmmaker. I'm supposed to know, you know, what's going on with my show. But I was totally at a roadblock until this guy, Matt Vance, said, Kevin, you don't need that. And so, honest to God, I took that section out, and I put the card in. This is 4 hours later, and the thing plays like butter. I was like, but I didn't think of that. You know, somebody had to come to me. And this is why all filmmakers really need to be open, not just me, because I believe you me, I've learned my lesson. But all filmmakers have to be open to other people's input, because otherwise you could lose. I mean, my movie is a little movie. It's not, you know, a $40 million or $140 million movie. But I can see the same thing happening in big studio movies. Somebody didn't pay attention. And somebody didn't listen. And you have to listen. And boy, I'm telling you, ever since that happened, I finished the movie the way it is, the way you saw it on Saturday. And now we're getting the awards, and now I'm talking to you. And, you know, it's a good thing.
So the
does
film
that all
screened.
Make sense?
Yes, it does. The film screened in Jakarta at something called IFCOM. What does IFCOM stand for?
Independent Film Competition.
And how did your film come to be in that festival?
I entered it.
So you heard about it and you entered. You entered it into the festival.
I did, and Michael and I are talking. It's like, why are you sending a gay movie to a, you know, a country that probably their religion doesn't, you know, agree with some of the tenets in your movie? And I'm like, yeah, but it's also, it's been westernized. There's other people, you know, over there. It's not just, you know, just one religion. And so, and I'll be darned, we got an award. So,
well,
you know,
I've been
you never
to
know.
Both
I
just wanted to say that I've been to both Indonesia. I've been to both Indonesia and Malaysia. And there's a huge misperception that because a country might be predominantly Muslim, that it's going to be predominantly anti-gay. I mean, some of the most amazing people I know that are involved in our movement are in those countries. Mm-hmm. And they're not, when you're there, it's not what you would think. So, Indonesia has a regular film festival the name of the film festival is slipping my mind, but it has a queer film. I think the word queer is actually part of the name of the festival. I've interviewed the filmmaker many times.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's interesting that this film that was probably never going to get made it all the way to Jakarta. So
Jakarta,
congratulations.
Isn't it? And I must say, I don't mean to say anything bad about Michael, but it was a knee-jerk reaction. It's like, why are you entering this festival? and I was like, I'd like to get it exposed. I'd like to get this movie exposed everywhere in the world. We just entered the Berlin Festival, but that's going to be a tough one, you know, so.
Well, everything's tough in the world of filmmaking, and when we come back, I'm in the home stretch of the interview, with some more exciting questions.
The snowstorm continues after this.
In Greater Palm Springs, since 1979, the Desert Business Association has promoted and supported LGBT and allied businesses and professionals who join together for business promotion, economic development, educational, and humanitarian purposes. Their vision is to connect, promote, and build prosperity by embracing all members of the community to make a positive difference. They have many events every month. Find them at DesertBusinessAssociation.com.
One of the things that I loved about your film, Kevin, was the pool. I don't want to give it away, but the pool scene. And I, but I'm guessing, did you really shoot the miniature sequence in that pool, or did you shoot that pool to make it seem? Oh, so that's where you actually shot that sequence. That
there were that, yes, Nicholas. But there were there was a tabletop. We actually shot part of it on top of my dining room table. But mostly it was in the water, in the pool. The very opening shot was a tabletop model that we shot on our dining room table.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to say about your film that we haven't yet discussed?
Yeah, go see it. It's really funny.
I have seen it. Is there anything you'd like to say to me about your film that we haven't yet discussed?
Well, first of all, Nicholas, I got to say this is really fun. I don't get to talk about the movie very much because everybody's bored, you know, pretty much bored with it. They've heard everything I have to say. So being able to talk to you about it is a real joy. So,
well, it's my pleasure to have you.
Yeah, I'm trying to sell it. If anybody out there wants to see it, call me, email me. I'm on Facebook, Kevin Irvine and Kevin Michael Irvine. And, you know, I just hope it has a life in the film festivals to come.
Well, I link from this episode to your trailer. And is there any other website or other than your own Facebook pages that you've just mentioned, is there any other contact info you want to share?
You know what? I'm sorry to say no.
That's okay. you're on Facebook as both Kevin Irvine and Michael Irvine, or those two separate profiles?
It's Kevin Irvine and Kevin Michael Irvine. I have two of those because I have books. I have a novel, comic novel called Prince Rick that I wanted to, and also something called Growing Up Gay Stories. They're short stories, and I wanted those to be separate on the Kevin Michael Irvine. But, I mean, they're both basically the same.
Well, tell me a little bit more about your books.
Oh, do we have time?
Yes, we do.
Oh, okay. Well, Prince Rick, there's another one. That one took 12 years. And again, you know, these people, I'm not the only person out in the world that has a day job. And it's really hard to come home and you know, you make dinner for your partner and you feed the dogs. And then by the time you get everything done, it's like 9 o'clock. I was like, oh my God, do I really want to write? And yes, I did. I still do. And it's just something that once you it's kind of like getting your teeth into a couple of characters, and you just go with it. And it's just really fun to see the life of the characters come to the page. And it's kind of spooky sometimes because they say things that I wasn't expecting, but some I keep and some I don't. Prince Rick is basically a Hamlet story where Hamlet and Horatio are lovers, but it's set in New York in the 1990s, and it's about the same kind of conscience that the main character, Rick, who is the Hamlet character, really has about the fact that somebody in his family died, and he's not sure who did it. And so from there is a mystery. And meantime, they're trying to put on a show off Broadway, which I know a lot about. You know, trying to put on a show, you know, over a long period of time.
Yes,
and,
of course.
Yeah. So from that, and then it's a coming out story because one of them is gay and the other one is not. And when the other one finds out that the Horatio character finds out that the Hamlet character is gay, it's like he just blows a gasket. But they've been friends from college. So it's a huge, dramatic, but comically dramatic thing where it's very entertaining. There's a lot of New York characters in there that I love, and that's what I want for my next project. But I need some money to do that. Just like every other filmmaker out there.
I have a final question for you.
Okay.
What was it, if anything, that you can point at in for your life to identify and follow your dreams?
What can I point to?
In your own life, do you have a source of inspiration that taught you that you could go after what you wanted in life?
Yes, you have to listen to yourself. And you have to, like, let go of all the electronic crap. And you have to, like, just take a walk. Walk your dog. Go to the movies, or maybe not the movies, but, I mean, something where you have some silence and some... Because I think that your personal voice inside can't get out if you have too much influx of technology.
So that's what you do currently to clear your mind and stay in touch with your creativity. But I'm talking about, was there a pivotal moment or experience or person or influence in your past history that lets you know, okay, I'm worthy, I'm okay, and I can go for my dreams and the life that I want?
I really would love to say yes, Nicholas, but no. I've always loved this, and you have to pick your career like you pick a husband or a partner, and you have, because you have to be in it for the long haul. And once you know, if you do find it, then you have to stick with it. You know, I know this sounds like cliche, you know, but really, that's the truth. I really didn't have a moment. I've always wanted to make movies. I've always wanted to write.
Well, congratulations for going out and doing what you've always wanted to do, and thank you for taking the time to be on the show.
Oh, well, thank you, Nicholas. This has been great. Thank you.
My pleasure. I've been speaking with filmmaker Kevin Michael Irvine of As Long As It Takes. Has won many awards, showing up in film festivals near you. I had the opportunity to see it at Cinema Diverse. For Cinema Diverse, the annual event, go to cinemadiverse.org. And if you have show ideas for me, my audience is worldwide. I've surpassed over 1.8 million listens so far in just over 3 years. And I'm often picked up by the Huffington Post. So if you want to pitch stories to me, just check out nicholassnow.com. And who knows what will happen.
We are, in fact, connecting the circuitry of humanity. All of us connected. Please continue to connect with Nicholas Snow on Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, Instagram, Google+, and other social networks. Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes, or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. This program is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. Thank you for being a part of the Snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.